Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily dive into the front page of Hacker News. Today is May 19th, 2025, and you're tuning into Deep Dive number 39.
That's right.
We've got, well, a really fascinating mix of stories today. Lots of debate on HN. Our mission, as always, is to sort of unpack those discussions for you.
Exactly. We're cutting through the noise, trying to give you the core of the conversations, the interesting angles, and really the context you need for why these things are buzzing today.
Okay, let's get into it. Today's lineup on Hacker News. Well, first up, the Windows subsystem for Linux is now open source. That got a lot of clicks.
Big news, yeah.
Then Zod 4 dropped. Also, the GitHub Copilot coding agent was introduced.
More AI in the dev cycle.
Definitely. And then a huge one. The European Investment Bank planning to inject $70 billion into European tech.
$70 billion. Wow.
And finally, a more personal piece. Side projects I built since 2009. Quite the range today.
Yeah, a really diverse set. Each one clearly, you know, hit a nerve with the HN crowd. So, WSL going open source. What were the first reactions you saw jumping out?
Well, there was definitely a sense of history. People looking back, lots of mentions of WSL1, you know, the original idea, the emulation.
Right, that direct kernel interaction attempt.
Yeah, and contrasting that with WSL2, which is more like a containerized VM. So, there's this kind of hope, maybe, that open sourcing it could, I don't know, steer it back towards something closer to that original vision.
That's a really interesting take. I mean, the whole WSL journey shows just how hard it is to properly bridge Linux and Windows, right?
Totally.
And making it open source now. Well, you wonder, could the community actually push that integration forward in ways Microsoft hadn't planned or maybe couldn't?
Could be.
We also saw, you know, a lot of comments from people who have just fully jumped ship to Linux for development.
Right, saying the experience is just smoother. Mm-hmm. And gaming came up a lot, too, with Valve's Proton.
Yeah, Proton's made huge strides. But the friction is still there, isn't it? Like with anti-cheat.
Oh, yeah. The Fortnite example came up. Epic's stance basically blocking it on Linux, even if the tech, like, could support it.
It's paradoxical, like you said. Mm. And then there's that weird Infinity Nikki situation blocking desktop Linux, but okay on Steam Deck.
Which is also Linux. It just shows it's not purely technical, right? It's policy. It's business decisions.
Exactly. It's a mix of tech and strategy. But, you know, we can't ignore the other side of the coin. A lot of HN commenters were quick to point out that tons of professional software, especially creative stuff, is still Windows only.
Absolutely. For a lot of folks, a full switch just isn't practical because of that one app they need.
Yeah. And there was another point about backwards compatibility, the frustration some people feel because Linux or MacOS might not run really old software, whereas Windows often just...
That legacy support thing. It's a different philosophy, I guess.
It really is. Now, something a bit more technical that got debated on HN, the name itself. Windows subsystem for Linux.
Oh, right. The clarification. People pointing out it's a Linux subsystem running on Windows, not the other way around.
Seems obvious, but...
Apparently, there are, like, technical or maybe even trademark reasons you can't easily lead with Linux in the name within the Windows world.
Yeah.
A small thing, but, you know, HN notices that stuff.
It's a good reminder that even naming isn't always straightforward in tech. And naturally, this led into the bigger ongoing Windows versus Linux stability debate.
Oh, the usual suspects came out. People talk about File Explorer acting weird. Those forced Windows updates.
Always the update.
Always. And just general developer UX gripes. But then contrasted with actually a lot of praise for modern Linux desktops. KDE Plasma on Wayland got mentioned quite a bit.
Yeah, especially multi-monitor support and scaling. That seems to be way better now, according to those commenters.
Definitely feels like Linux desktop has matured a lot there.
It has. And look, for many on HN, WSL is still just a really convenient middle ground, right? You get your Linux tools without ditching Windows entirely.
Yeah, the Docker experience on WSL was brought up as a plus. Better than on macOS for some, though things like OrbStack are changing that maybe.
True. Alternatives are popping up. But the big news here, the thing that really got the open source folks talking on HN, is the license. MIT.
Right. Why is that specific license such a big deal? And what about those CLAs, the contributor license agreements?
Well, the MIT license is super permissive. It basically says you can do almost anything with the code. Use it, change it, share it, as long as you keep the original copyright notice. It encourages broad use and contribution, which the HN community generally likes.
Okay, so it's very open.
Very open. Now, a CLA is different. That's an agreement where if you contribute code back, you might have to grant the project owners certain rights, maybe even assign copyright. This helps them manage the project legally, defend it if needed. The HN discussion didn't dig super deep into whether Microsoft is using a CLA here, but just choosing MIT sets a very open tone.
Gotcha. But, you know, there was still that undercurrent of skepticism, wasn't there? That feeling on HN that maybe this is just good marketing for Microsoft.
Yeah, that perspective always comes up when big tech embraces open source. It's kind of understandable given history, right? It raises that fundamental question you see a lot on H&N. How do these big, traditionally closed companies really engage with open source authentically?
It's a constant tension. Okay, let's pivot a bit. Zod 4. This was high up on HN today, too. We don't have tons of detail on the specifics from our source comments, but clearly it got attention.
Yeah, Zod's huge in the TypeScript world for schema validation, making sure your data shapes are right. So a major new version like Zod 4, you can bet the HN threads were diving deep into the technicals.
So probably discussions about new features, maybe performance improvements, or any breaking changes developers need to watch out for.
Exactly. Things like better type inference, maybe new ways to handle tricky data validation scenarios. It's the kind of detailed, practical stuff that a big chunk of the HN audience really gets into. Developers building robust apps care a lot about tools like Zod.
Makes sense. Okay, moving to the next big thing, GitHub Copilot Coding Agent. This definitely stirred the pot. The whole idea of AI automating the boring parts of coding.
Yeah, that really captured people's imagination on HN. The thought of AI handling stuff like writing basic tests, updating docs, managing dependencies. I mean, the dream is it frees up developers for the really hard problems, right? The creative stuff.
That's the vision. But there was caution too, wasn't there? People worried about AI just generating, junk.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for things needing nuance, like good documentation or even the code structure itself. Someone used the word slop.
Slop, yeah. That's a real concern. And you see it discussed on HN beyond just code. For any generative AI, LLMs are great at churning out stuff, but is it accurate? Is it clear? Does it sound right? You still need that human oversight.
Which leads to that question about the developer's role changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be prompting more and reviewing more rather than typing out every line?
That's the big question. Some HN commenters were even musing if today's programming languages might become like, you know, assembly language, a lower level detail you don't touch directly as much.
Whoa, that's a big shift to think about.
It is. But, you know, there were also more down-to-earth comments on HN, people pointing out that, hey, not everyone gets to work on the fun stuff. A lot of developers maintain existing systems due necessary but maybe less glamorous tasks.
And maybe they're okay with that, or rely on it for job security. So the idea of AI taking over those tasks isn't universally welcomed.
That's a really important counterpoint. The job impact is complex, and the experiences with Copilot itself seemed pretty varied on HN too.
Yeah, some people were saying it's a huge productivity boost, especially for starting new projects like Greenfield stuff.
Right. But others were saying, well, it struggles a bit more with existing complex code bases. You still need a human architect guiding it, making sure it doesn't mess things up.
It's not magic yet.
Not quite. And there's that risk, some technical folks on HN highlighted, of AI introducing architectural tech debt. Basically, making easy choices now that cause big headaches later.
Oof, yeah. You need to watch out for that. Cost came up too.
It did. A few HN users mentioned their token usage and potentially their bills going up quite a bit when using these AI coding tools heavily. Something to keep an eye on.
Definitely. And the workflow aspect.
Yeah.
The fact that this new Copilot agent can create pull requests, that seemed positive.
Yeah, having that built-in review step where a human has to approve the AI's work before it gets merged, that seemed like a sensible approach to many on HN. It doesn't get direct push access.
Good. And then there was that phrase, vibe coding.
Huh, yeah.
Yeah.
And just general discussion about whether AI-generated code really feels like yours. It touches on that personal, creative side of programming.
Does it feel like craftsmanship anymore? Interesting question.
It is. Performance was another thing mentioned on HN. Some found the inline suggestions or edits from Copilot a bit slow compared to just querying a separate AI chat interface.
Right, that little lag can break your flow. And privacy, of course. Always privacy.
The perennial concern.
Mm-hmm.
Especially around training on private code. GitHub has official statements denying that for business and enterprise data. But, you know, trust is key, and it's a recurring topic on HN.
Absolutely. And finally, people shared other tools, other workflows. Manually feeding context to LLMs, using good readMEs to guide them. It seems like everyone's still figuring out the best way to use these AI assistants.
It's definitely an experimental phase. The HN community is right in the thick of it. Okay, shifting gears completely now. Let's talk about that massive European investment bank news. $70 billion for European tech.
Yeah, you could almost hear the collective sigh, or maybe groan from the Hacker News comments.
Yeah.
Just overwhelming skepticism.
Deep skepticism is putting it mildly. A lot of it seemed based on, well, past experiences with similar EU funding programs.
Yeah, the criticisms were pretty consistent. Things like, you need connections, you need to be linked to a university already to even get looked at.
Right, the network effect.
And this idea that the EIB is too risk-averse, so they end up funding safer, maybe less innovative projects, plus just the sheer time it takes, the bureaucracy involved from applying to actually getting money.
Someone even brought up that quote from Mario Draghi about the EU not taking enough risks. It really tapped into that frustration.
And it sparked that classic HN debate, government funding versus private capital. Is the problem really a lack of money in Europe? Or is it how public money gets spent?
Yeah, lots of arguments that private capital is there, but public funds get funneled inefficiently through academic or bureaucratic hoops. And the counter argument, just lower taxes and let private investors decide.
It's that fundamental philosophical split, isn't it? Even capital gains taxes got compared UK versus California as a factor in where VCs put their money.
These details matter for investment flows, though, to be fair, there were some counterpoints on HN, people mentioning Europe's high quality of life metrics, the Human Development Index.
Right, and that comparing the entire U.S. to individual European countries is maybe not a fair fight, given the diversity.
It's complex, and we did see some success stories mentioned, like UK fintech and agtech getting solid funding, Revolut, Wave got name dropped, so it's not all doom and gloom.
True. But the overall feeling, the dominant vibe on HN, was still critical. This idea that European culture can sometimes be, I don't know, less geared towards that hyper-growth hustle model. Mm-hmm. And that regulations, while maybe good for society, can slow down innovation.
With that cultural aspect, yeah. Contrasted often with the U.S. tech scene. Some commenters went further, arguing the U.S. setup, it's sort of multicultural, individualistic roots just naturally favors markets more.
But then others push back, saying, hang on, don't just look at GDP. Europe excels in health, quality of life, justice, partly because of regulation.
It's a valid point. The tricky part, though, as someone HN pointed out, is paying for all that long term without more innovation and productivity growth. Can you sustain it?
The $1 million or 70 billion euro question. And the fear, the really big fear expressed on HN was that this EIB money will just end up with the big established companies, the ones who know how to navigate the bureaucracy.
Yeah, not necessarily the genuinely disruptive startups that maybe need it most. That's a common worry with big government funds.
Which led to suggestions, right? Like the EIB just matching private investment.
Exactly. That model, used in places like Israel and China, apparently, where public money follows private money, it leverages the VC's due diligence. That came up quite a bit on HN.
Seems sensible. Leadership was also questioned.
Yeah, concerns raised on HN about whether the person leading this huge tech investment push has the right background. Is a career politician the best fit versus someone with deep tech or business experience?
Domain expertise matters, especially in tech.
Hugely. Yeah. And then there were the internal EU challenges brought up on HN. Things like labor laws maybe not being super startup friendly in some countries, or the financial rewards for working at a startup just not comparing well to big companies or government jobs.
Structural things that this money alone might not fix.
Precisely. So yeah, ideas like using the EIB funds as cheap credit for VCs, but only if they match at 1.1, kept coming back in the HN discussion.
And there was that other interesting idea. Maybe Europe shouldn't try to build the next Google or Amazon, but focus on something like a distributed Eurocloud.
Right. Focus on digital sovereignty, build foundational infrastructure rather than directly competing head-on with U.S. hyperscalers everywhere, an alternative strategy.
Interesting thought. But overall, yeah, the overwhelming takeaway from HN on this 70B injection, deep skepticism about whether it'll really move the needle for European tech on a global scale.
A lot of wait and see, but leaning towards doubt. Okay, last topic, a very different feel to this one, the personal reflection. Side projects I've built since 2009.
This one clearly resonated. It hit on something core to the HN community, didn't it? That drive to just build stuff on the side.
Yeah,
for years.
Totally. And the author's point about rediscovering that intense energy and focus, even after feeling like maybe that youthful drive was gone, that seemed to connect with a lot of people. Believing in the project was key.
It's inspiring, isn't it? Hearing from people who keep that passion going, sometimes even turning it into their main gig. Though, thankfully, the HN comments also had that reality check.
Which was?
That sometimes, you know, not having energy for a side project just means You're tired. Yeah. You need rest, not more pressure to be productive. And that's okay.
Such an important point. Burnout is real, and relaxation isn't laziness. The discussion also picked up on that idea of belief being the crucial fuel, maybe even more than raw energy, especially as you get older.
Yeah, that conviction about the project. And the classic problem, the never releasing trap.
Oh, yeah. HN commenters definitely related to that. Endlessly tweaking, never quite feeling it's ready.
Right. And the discussion around, okay, when is it okay to hold back? Minor tweaks versus maybe big architectural changes that really do warrant waiting.
It's a tough judgment call. And that internal conflict people feel spending time on this passion project versus maybe doing something more financially rewarding, that came up on HN too.
The opportunity cost, it's always there. But then there's the flip side, that sheer satisfaction of building something cool, putting it out there, and having someone find it useful or interesting.
That intrinsic reward. For many on HN, that seems to be the real driver, more than money. Just the joy of creation, the validation.
And that idea of bore out came up as distinct from burnout. Like maybe the lack of motivation is an exhaustion, but just lack of interesting challenges.
That's a fascinating distinction, probably relevant for a lot of smart people on HN. What about AI inside projects?
Yeah, mixed views there too. Some people embracing it, others feeling like for personal project, they only want to use code they really thought of themselves.
The sense of personal authorship again. Interesting. And there was some practical advice too, right? Like if you do want to sell a side project, make sure people can actually find you and contact you.
Basic stuff, but easily overlooked. And the variety of projects mentioned on HN was amazing. List sites, little tools, even sold projects like Google Cemetery, whatever that was.
Huh. Intriguing name. It just shows the breadth of interests. And of course, the challenge of maintaining side projects long term and deciding when it's time to let one go.
Yeah, sunsetting projects gracefully, that's part of the life cycle too. But really, the main theme echoing through the HN comments was just intrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
Believing in what you're building. That seems to be the secret sauce.
It really does. That personal drive, that hacker spirit of just wanting to build and explore.
So there you have it. That was our deep dive into today's Hacker News front page buzz. We went from, you know, operating systems and open source with WSL.
To AI potentially changing the game for developers with Copilot.
Then that huge European tech funding debate.
And finishing up with the very personal motivations behind side projects. A real mix.
Definitely. And these conversations happening right now in places like Hacker News, they really are shaping where tech is heading. Staying tuned in is, well, pretty valuable if you're in this world. So on that note, here's a final thought for you to chew on. Thinking about Copilot and similar AI tools, what's the one single, maybe tedious development task you'd be most thrilled to just completely hand over to an AI right now? And what would you do with that freed up time and mental energy?
Ooh, good question. Something to ponder. Thanks everyone for joining us for this deep dive into the Hacker News front page.